Moadim l'simcha. Today's daf in the Sechet Makot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKedesh, is daf Chet, and we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah on daf Zayin Omud Beit. Nishmata Barzel Mikito Vaharak. So, remember that we had the Pasuk, and we're going to be analyzing this Pasuk at great length. We went over the Pasukim yesterday, where we said, "V'nitcha yado v'garzen lichrot ha'etz, v'nashal ha'barzel min ha'etz." So what exactly does that mean? V'nashal ha'barzel min ha'etz. It sounds like the metal piece of the axe head had fallen off of the handle, although etz is a little bit funny to say from a handle. And this is exactly what the problem is. The way that the pasuk is pronounced, according to the Mikra that is given over to us, is v'nashal. V'nashal would mean that it itself came off. If it would have said v'nishal, so then it would have meant that the hammer or the axe had actually caused a piece to fly off from the eitz that was mitpakea, and that killed somebody. Now, these are two very different ways of learning the pasuk. So let's see that, in fact, it's a machlokas how to understand the pasuk's meaning. So it says in the pasuk, "V'nashal ha'barzel min ha'etz." Therefore, "Nishmat ha'barzel mikitov harag." If the iron top of the axe head, in other words, fell off of its handle while he was trying to chop a piece of wood and killed someone. The machlokas is that Rebbe says that is not considered to be a shergeg that is chayev, and it, even though it sounds like it, because in this case, it's actually a machlokas. Some learn in this case, it's a korov lemezid, because if the top of the axe flies off, it means that he didn't properly check that it was attached from the first place. And anything that's korov lemezid, remember, is not considered to be included in the kapora of galut, and therefore you don't go to galut for it. And that's good for the way many of the Rishonim learn. However, others learn that it's so unusual that the axe head should actually fly off of the handle, that it's considered to be korov la'ones. And many understand that's what is the mashma'ut of Rashi, although it's not 100% clear. So according to Rebbe, it does not mean in the pasuk that the blade flew off the handle. And in that case, you would not be geila. V'chomim ha'imri, no, that's exactly what it does mean. And you would be geila. But how about if a chip of wood comes off of the Eitz HaMitbakeya? How about if you were chopping a tree and there was a splinter of wood that went and killed someone as you were chopping it? Rebbe Omer Goled, that's the case that the Pasuk is talking about. And there you would be Goled. And that's how to read the Pasuk. V'nishal ha'barzel min ha'etz. The barzel caused a piece of the tree, so a wood chip, to come off of the tree. But the Chachamim say, no, in that case, eino gole. That is not considered to be a typical kind of situation. It is not gola. Now, we'll see there's other issues in the Gemara of what it is we need to take into consideration. But let's understand how it is that Rebbe reads the Pasuk. Omer lam Rebbe l'Chachamim. So, does it say that the axe head falls off of its wood, which would mean its handle? That it actually, I don't know what the v'nashal would mean, but clearly we can't read it v'nashal, because how in the world would the axe slip off of the tree that it's cutting? Furthermore, it's quite clear that the eitz in the pasuk cannot mean the eitz of the handle, besides the point that I make. It would have said, if it was referring to the handle, it would have said its handle, eitzo. But there's another clear-cut limud that it's referring to the eitz that you're cutting. Because, look, it says in this pasuk, asher yavo et re'eu b'ya'ar lachtov eitzim. So what does that mean? you're coming into a forest in order to cut trees. That's the eights. You're coming to cut a tree. For God's sake, isn't that the same eights that you were coming in? I mean, it says the same word, ha-eits, both at the beginning of the pasuk, lichrot ha-eits, and at the end of the pasuk, where it says min ha-eits. So it's the same eights, isn't it? So it's actually the eights lamala, just like the eights amur lamala at the beginning of the pasuk, where it says you're going into the forest to be chopping the tree. Then when it says eitz lamata, v'nashal habarzal min ha-eitz, it's the same eitz. So just like the eitz amur lamala is a reference to the chopping, the chopped tree that you're going to chop, the eitz amur lamata, when it says that the axe was chopping and a piece flew, must be referring min ha-eitz, not from its handle, but min ha-eitz amit bakea. Omar Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi, Omar Rab, basically, they're both reading the same pasuk. It says, V'nashal habarzal min ha'etz. Now, obviously, in the Torah, we do not have any of the nekudot. So, we know that we're supposed to be reading it, V'nashal, which is called the Mikra, and we know that we're supposed to be writing it, V'nashal, without any indication that it can't be read v'nishal. Actually, Rashi says over here something very strange, that if it would be v'nashal, what he seems to mean is that since in this case it's confusing, and in this case, if you really wanted to be certain that we would read it v'nashal, the Torah would have inserted either an olive or a hay to make it clear that the nun is to be pronounced na instead of ni. Since it didn't do that, it leaves it open, more likely, to the understanding of vinisha. That's what the Gemara thinks now. I'll go over it again. This is a little bit of a complex understanding of Yeshem LeMikra VeYeshem LeMesoret. First, let's read through the Gemara, and then I'll give you an overview of what's happening. So therefore, it's written v'nashala barzel, it's pronounced v'nashala barzel min ha'etz. Rebbe holds that actually, when you're looking at a pasuk, you have to first consider as the primary, the aim, that's the primary, the mother of all bombs, or the mother of all pirushim, is the way it's the mesorah. The mesorah is how it's written in the Torah, as opposed to the way it's pronounced, which is called the mikra. And since it's written as v'nishal, because otherwise it would have had, as Rashi says, the hay or the olive, therefore it means that the top of the axe caused a shilu of the chip from the tree. That's the proper way of reading it. So therefore it's PL. It is not actually the nashal that we have over here with its being the eight was nashal. It's rather a transitive PL. It was nishel, something else. What was it nishel? A piece of the tree, a chip of the tree. V'rabbanan savrei, masha'en kein rabbanan hold, yesh eim lemikra. You should always go according to the way that you're supposed to read it, and you're supposed to read it v'nashal. And therefore, it means that the top of the axe flew off. That's the only way to understand it. Asks the Gemara, but that doesn't make sense. Because if you're saying that the machlokas is, the way Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi quotes Rav, the machlokas is whether we go according to Yesh Eim LeMikra or Yesh Eim LeMasoret. I mean, first of all, let me point out that that's not what Rebbe said, right? What he said himself in the Braita, when he explains to the Chachomi why he thinks they're wrong, he doesn't say, well, I mean, the way to properly be Dorish it is v'nishel. That's not what he says. He says it doesn't say min etzol, and it's also comparing the etzlamala to the etzlamata. Now, why the heck didn't he mention the issue? if the real issue was that they're arguing about Yeshem Lemikra, Yeshem Lemasoret, what the heck is going on? Rav is arguing with the Braita about what Rebbe really meant to say? The whole sugya, obviously, is actually hinting at something going on beneath the text, right? So we have to look further into that. But as the Gemara is saying, it doesn't make any sense, because it happens to be that Rebbe is dafka one of the fundamental shitas that hold yesh em lemikra and not yesh em lemasoret. So how could you say that the machlokas over here is based on Rebbe's shita that yesh em lemasoret? The Rebbe yesh em lemasoret sphere, like that happens to not be what he holds. Because, as Rav Yitzchok Bar Yosef explained, b'shem Rebbe Yochanan, that there's a whole list of very important shitot that all agree that yesh em lemikra. What are these important shitot? Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda ben Ro'etz, Bet Shammai, Rebbe Shimon, Rebbe Akiva, all of them hold yesh em lemikra. We had this back in Sanhedrin, if you recall, at the beginning of the Masechet. And over there, we proved each one of them. And we showed that they all hold yesh em lemikra. So how in the world could you possibly say that the whole point of the machlokas here is whether yesh em lemikra, yesh em lemasoret, and Rebbe is the one who holds yesh em lemasoret, if Rebbe is one of the primary shitas that holds yesh em lemikra? That's crazy. Ah, says the Gemara, that's exactly the reason why hainu teka'amar lehu va'od. That's why I'm giving you another reason. So that it's if to say, even though normally I would have to agree that because yesh em lemikra, we should read it v'nashal, but since it even says the eitz lemala and the eitz lemata, I'll have to change my mind in this particular case. Now, this is very strange. The whole sugya is very strange. So let's understand, actually, the way Tosfos is Maram is that we need to understand the sugya like this. The question we understand from the beginning is that actually the question of the way in which we read the eights versus eight so is the basis of whether we're going to be pronouncing the pasuk in the way that it's read, or whether we're going to be forced to say that the pasuk exists on two levels, and we're expected to apply, because of the other rayas, which is also the va'od, that the pasuk is clearly telling us that you've got to understand, even though it says v'nashal, that's only kepshute. But in terms of the actual din, it would have to be a v'nishal. And Tosfos brings a beautiful raya from the drasha of Yera'eh Yir'eh. Now, you all remember that drasha. Kishem sheba lirot, kach ba lera'ot, and that the person, therefore, if he's blind in one eye, he's not going to be chayev in the aliyah l'regel, because it's not going to be daimeh. What does that mean? So there Tosfos explains, look, it says in the pasuk, Yera'eh kol zechurcha et p'nei Hashem, right? But Yera'eh doesn't fit with the word et. Because Yera'eh, if you are coming to be et, then it has to be read Yera'eh et. Not Yera'eh. Yera'eh would mean to be seen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that couldn't be et. It would have to be El Pnei HaAdon Hashem. Yera'eh El Pnei HaAdon Hashem. He should expose himself to be seen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes. So therefore, the pasuk is forcing you into understanding that there's two levels, Yera'eh and Yir'eh. The et forces you to say, even though the way we're told to read the pasuk is Yera'eh, obviously that doesn't fit with et, and therefore it must also be saying Yir'eh in this case. Beautiful raya. Makes so much sense. So that you need to take the correct grammar of the way the pasuk arranges itself and use that to force your concentration on either the mikra or the masoret, which allows multi-leveled interpretations of the same pasuk. One lafita pshuto, which obviously is v'nashal, But the other, based on the understanding of where you're forced to see it, which would mean I'd have to read it v'nishel. That's the point, which is beautiful. And therefore, that's why Rashi introduces it. The Rishonim all yell at Rashi. What do you mean? There's not a single place in the whole Torah where it puts in an extra hay or an olive to say v'na. Someone said the Torah should have said v'na. That's not the point. The point that Rashi was making was that in the context where it doesn't make sense to read it as v'nashal, because then it doesn't fit with the eights in the pasuk, and that's why it says va'od, and furthermore, man, how could you think differently? It's obviously the same eights that was the beginning. You see how beautifully it fits? So Rashi is saying, if you want to insist that we cannot read it v'nishal, then you have to put in something like an olive or a hay to make it v'nashal, which is true. Beautiful. Anyway, so the sugya actually is really quite clear. If you don't understand it this way, what? That's crazy. They're arguing about whether Yeshem Labikram, Yeshem Labisaret, but only in this case. And then why are you making it dependent on the machlokas of Yeshem Labikram, Yeshem Labisaret? And why did Rebbe make it dependent on whether you're reading Ha'etz, you see? So everything fits perfectly. Okay, so that's lovely. Mamish lovely. Okay, so that's why he says va'ot, the whole purpose. Great. Okay. Omer of Papa. So now we've got a case, and this actually forces us to zero in very carefully on what the logic is of the issue between Rebbe and the Chachamim. So here's a case. Somebody throws, it's a very classical kind of situation. You take a clod of hard dirt, and you throw it at the top of a palm tree because you're trying to get some dates down, right? So the clod hits the date, which goes flying, and it actually ends up hitting a infant on the head and killing the infant. So if he also tamri v'kotel, that would be the same machlokas of Rebbe and the Rabbanan, right? Because the question is, if the axe shoots a piece of wood out, well, that's the case over here. The clod that you threw at it is enough to hit something else, which then flew out and it killed somebody. So according to Rebbe, that would be exactly the case that we're talking about, v'nishel. According to the Rabbanan, no. Since they hold in the case of the v'nashal ha'etz, you would be putter. In this case, if you were v'nashal the tamar, it would also be putter. Yes, says Gemara. I mean, isn't that clear? Isn't that pshita? Says Gemara, no, it's not pshita. Because it involves an understanding of the nature of koach and koach kocho. Because I might have thought that if you've got koach kocho, then it's not for sure, even according to Rebbe, it's not going to be Mechayev. Because when you take the hatchet, you slam it into a wood that you're chopping, it's directly your energy that was transferred to the chip of wood that went flying and hit the person and killed him. Because you were holding that axe handle, you were the one who transmitted your koyach into that axe handle, and it's as if you directly hit that piece of wood and threw it, because it's directly your force. That's called kocho. But in this case, you had to let go of the clod that you threw, right? So if you throw it, maybe at that point, it's considered to be the first stage of your kocho. And now when it hits something else, that would only be koach kocho, because you're no longer attached to it. And there Rebbe himself would be made. We're never mechayev misa bekoach kocho. Remember the case that we had back in Sanhedrin when you release the energy in a dam. So we consider it to be the first force of the water that comes out. The release of potential energy is viewed directly as your energy in exactly the same way. If somebody else pulls back on an arrow, now the arrow has potential energy. You take over that arrow and you're holding it. You didn't put the energy into that arrow, but if you release that arrow, it's considered to be kocho. That means that the release of potential energy is considered to be your energy. That's what we proved in Sanhedrin. But the moment that it hits the land, when you release the energy of the dam, this was the classic Western, you know. So the villain has tied up the heroine down the tracks. So in this case, there's no train coming down the tracks. There's the water from the dam coming down the tracks. The villain runs up, and as the music gets more and more powerful, he slowly releases and turns the wheel, which lets the water out of the dam. Oh my gosh. And the poor heroine is going to be killed by the water that's now. It's not the force of the water that hits her, you see. It's that she ends up drowning. Oh, no, that's not going to be b'chai of you. That would be koach kocho. It's only if the water is aimed directly at her and shatters her, and that kills her or drowns her directly, that kills her, then it's considered to be kocho. So I might have thought that this is also called koach kocho. Kamash malan, that's what Rav Papa's Chiddush is. Okay. So wait, so what would be koach kocho? I mean, this does sound like koach kocho. Can you explain to me, like, what would you call koach kocho according to Rebbe? I don't understand. Well, I mean, for instance, you went ahead and shot a pisa, you throw the clod hits a branch which then slams into the date, knocks the date off, and the date goes and kills. So vazutam revakato. There Rebbe would agree that even though you caused it directly, but it's still only koach kocho, and therefore you would be potter. Ah, what happened to the heroine? I see. Well, you'll have to stay at the edge of your seat till the end of the daf to find that out. That way no one can fall asleep. Alrighty, this brings us to a special moment in which we've been left all alone. Can you imagine? And I'll have to do this special moment all on my own. Doc's not here. Oy vavoy. Richie's not here, still celebrating his birthday or trying to recover from his birthday. Zakta Halakha Mishnah. Hazorek Evan, the Rishut Rabim Vaharag, Areze Golet. So somebody throws a stone. It seems to be saying he throws a stone right into the street and kills somebody. He goes into Golas. Now, that's a little bit strange. I mean, that sounds like straight-out murder. I mean, how is that not gross negligence, which we said is potter? Gemara will discuss. Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, I have a diak from the Pasuk, which we're going to discuss in the Gemara, that if somebody throws a stone, and after the stone leaves his hand, some other guy sticks his head out of the window to see what the noise is and gets that stone. He catches that stone perfectly right in his head, which of course kills him at the same time that he catches it. So this guy sticks his head out and he catches that stone. Then you would be putter. And we'll see what his diak is in the pasuk in a moment. Now, how about if somebody throws a stone into his own front yard? Zarakata evan lechatzero v'harak. Well, then it would depend. If the person who was killed had rishus to go into the yard, so then he would be chayiv galut. But if that person had no rishus to go in there, then he would not be. Because it says, Vasher yavo et re'eo v'ya'ar. Why do you think the Torah tells us this little story? The guy was coming into the forest, and what forest? Ah. That is to tell me, just like a forest is a reshus l'nizik, vila mazik likanes l'sham, so too, af kol, reshut l'nizik ula mazik likanes l'sham. It means that it's a place that you and your victim both had the right to be there. Masha Enkein, Yatza Chatzar Ba'al HaBayit, in the event that you're in your own yard, you're not responsible if the Rishus of the Nizik and the Mazik is not the same. And we mentioned both Nizik and Mazik, some are Mefarish the Girsa, that has Rishus Nizik and the Mazik, which is what we started with, because the truth is that the Mazik also is not Chayev Golas, where he was the one who went into the other person's Rishus. That is a Korav L'mezit. So it could be both cases. So you need Rishus L'nizik U'lamazik L'kanes L'sham. So the concept of forest provides the sense of the possibility of a shogeg, which is open to all. I'm convinced that this is the reason that Forrest Gump was called Forrest Gump. It was actually to give over that sense of the hefkeris, so to speak, of a person that everybody is shaylet on and always is like everywhere, in order to give you that sense of rishus. I mean, obviously subconsciously, but it's a perfect name for the character, right? Based on this pasuk. Les mide de lo remiza b'yoraita. And what can I tell you? If Ori is suffering today, I think on Pesach you're allowed to give her a empty box of boost so that at least she shouldn't feel deprived. Abba Shaul Omer. All right. I have another diak from that comparison to the Chatavat Eitzim, besides the forest. Ma Chatavat Eitzim is rishus. Av kol rishus. So when the Torah gives you a chiyuv of golus, it's only where what you were doing was not for the sake of a mitzvah. But if what you're doing is the sake of a mitzvah, then you are not chayev. So for instance, suppose you have a father who hits his son as part of chinuch and accidentally kills him, or a rav that is rodeh et talmido and accidentally kills him, or a shliach beit din who actually kills someone. Now, how does he actually kill someone? Now, this is a big machlokas rishonim. How does he actually kill someone? Because, look, if he gave him more than the number of makot, so then he wasn't being Isaac in a mitzvah. It wasn't a mitzvah to give someone more than the number of makot. If he gave him the medically mandated number of makot, and the guy dies anyway, so then it would be an onus. So like the whole thing doesn't really make much sense. And it's because of that that the Rambam learns that the case over here is referring to a shliach beit din who was actually serving a subpoena. And somebody refused to come to court and he drags him to court and is apparently not aware that the person is a delicate person. Anyway, he ends up killing him and beating him in order to come to court. That would be the case. But Lamaisa, what about all those other Rishonim who learned that that's not the case and that it actually is referring to Shliach Beis Din? And Rashi says that he's being Arboim. And actually, because of this question, then if it's talking about that the Beis Din had already been omade him, that he could be Makabo, which is part of the din, so then that's called an onus gomor. So why in the world is he potter because he's Isaac B'mitzvah? He's potter because this is not one of the kind of things that would be Machayev you anyway, even if it weren't a mitzvah. So because of that, the Rived says that it's talking about that he must have been Makahim more than the Beis Din had been omade him. And obviously, that's not HaKoshal Mitzvah, so he must mean that the person had made a mistake, and he was, either he had heard the number of Makas differently, or he made a mistake in counting, or maybe the Dayan made a mistake, whatever. Okay, but as I said, the Rambam says it's not even talking about Shliach Beis Din in terms of Makas itself. So we have at least three approaches in the Rishonim about this last piece. Anyway, let's take that Mishnah step by step. A guy throws a stone into Rishus HaRabim. I mean, this Yechayev Golos on? Into Rishus HaRabim? I mean, that is gross negligence. I understand. There's a street full of people, and yes, you casually throw the stone out of your window and kill somebody. I mean, that is not a Chiyav of Golos. Calling that Shogeg? That's close to Mazid. So how could you say that there would be a Chiyav of Golos? Omer of Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, it's talking about Bisoter et kotalo. So he didn't stomp throw a stone. What happened was that there was a wall that was condemned by the city, and he was taking down that wall, and a stone fell as he was taking down the wall, and somebody was killed because of it. I don't understand. How does that answer it? So fine, he wasn't randomly throwing stones, but if he's taking down a wall, it's part of his responsibility either to only take down the wall when he's got people down at the bottom who are saying people to keep away, or he knows for a fact that no one's around, or to build a protective wall like we do today, put up one of those toppings. So how does that answer? Iboy Lele Yune, it's still grossly negligent. No, it talks about where he's taking this wall down in the middle of the night. And so what in the middle of the night? So people don't walk in the middle of the night? What kind of answer is that? Belila, not me, by Lele Yunik. You're still responsible to look, but nobody's walking there. It's talking about that he was taking down a wall, but it wasn't really next to the street where people would be walking. It was next to the garbage dump. Well, what does that mean? Don't talk to me about garbage dumps. I mean, what's the situation? Is this the type of garbage dump that people are going to be using to relieve themselves? Shchichei barabim. I mean, remember, people have to find a place to relieve themselves. If it's that type of place, so then, again, it's grossly negligent. I mean, people go there to use as a bathroom, and he's throwing stones on them. And if people don't use it, so it's an empty place. Why is he considered to be a shogeg? He's korov l'onus, because nobody ever goes there. So he's taking down his wall. Nobody goes there. I mean, what's he supposed to do? Amrif Papa, well, what we're talking about is an ashpa that is visible to people walking by on the street on the other side. Because of that, people will not go there to relieve themselves in the middle of the day. But they will go there in the nighttime. Now, he goes, so it's Enasili Panot Babiyon. Now, it happens that obviously if somebody is desperate for a bathroom, they're going to go run up there, even it's the daytime, and try their best to be as sanua as possible, but they have no choice. So it does happen that people get there. Ika de mikre viyativ. So you can't call him a posheya, because almost never in the daytime is anybody there. But you can't call him an ones, because it could be that people would come in an emergency. So that is precisely the type of middle situation that we're referring to. You threw a stone into a Rosh Hasharabim, where it is a Rosh Hasharabim in the sense of the public has access. That's the only way that we can understand the nature of this Rosh Hasharabim. It's midway between a pshia and an ones. And that's precisely what the Mishnah is coming to illustrate for us. That's what is called shogeg. So by working out the circumstances, we understand the nature of the shigaga. Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, if the person puts his head out after the stone was already thrown, then it's considered to be potter from this galut. So what he says is, I have a diak in the pasuk. The bright explains what is that diak. Tana Rabbana. Since it says in the pasuk, umatsa et re'ehu vameit. That's the continuation of the v'nashal habarzel. Umatsa et re'ehu. So matsa et re'ehu means that the person was there waiting to be found, and not that he was mamtzi et atzmo. That's the point. So matza means prat lemamtzi et atzmo. Mikan amar Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, im mishiyatzta even miyado, hotzi halat rosho v'kibla, patur. Fine. Now, in the event, however, that there would be a trajectory, doesn't mean that he has to necessarily be there. Let's say that somebody is running along the road. Now, at the time that you threw the Evan, that person is aimed at the spot where the Evan is going to be falling. And you see him, that is, or you could have seen him, that is not the same, l'chora, as mamtzi et atzmo. He was there, he just wasn't in that exact spot. So l'chora, that would be, even according to Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, that would be chayiv. Now, the problem with Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov's diak is that he seems to be implying that when it says umatsa, It means something that had been there initially, right? That's the whole point of his diuk. But ask the Gemara, that's not what matzah means, and I'll prove it to you. Lememra, are you trying to say that when it says umatzah, it means it was there before? It says exactly the opposite in terms of the dinim of someone who sold his field. And the question is, the dinim of geula, can you buy the field back and so on, right? So there the Torah also says, umatzah, uses the same loshon, hisiga yado, umatzah kidei geulato. So in the event that the person manages to get together the money and he's able to buy back his field, so then you are mechuyev to sell it back to him. That's the whole pasuk. V'chisha v'chneimim karo v'yishiva ta'odef li'isha shemachalo, and the person cannot prevent him from buying back the field prorated based on the number of years that were left until the yovel, right? So what does it say over there? It says umatza, and there it says exactly the opposite. Since it says v'yisika yado umatza kedei gulato, it's only if he actually finds it now. But if it was there originally and he had sold the field, let's say as a field that was nearby, and he sells that field that was nearby, and then he manages in the course of the next year to sell a field that he had in a different country or something that he couldn't translate into funds right away, and he sells that field, that's not called umatzah. He had that the whole time. And therefore, you cannot, and we're medayik from there, you cannot be mocher a field that is rachok and use the funds to be goel a field that is karov, because it was there the whole time. You took that money into consideration at the time that you sold the field. So that teaches us, if the money was in your property in advance, you had the field, loyim kar barachot v'yigol b'karov, you can't now sell that field because now it's convenient to sell. Or if you had a crummy field you couldn't find a buyer for, you can't sell that field and use the money to buy back your field because you always had that field. So that means that the word umatzah is exactly the opposite of that. Is crazy. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, well, umatzah has got to mean it was there in advance. And here it says just the opposite. Umatzah means that it couldn't be there in advance. I mean, how could the same word mean the opposite? Oh, my Rava, you never heard of context? The whole point of understanding a word is that you understand it contextually. Hacha minyana dekra, v'hasa minyana dekra. This is one of Rava's favorite ways of pointing out the meaning of a word. You must take the context according to the overall mashma'ut of the pasuk. So look, over there, where it's talking about buying your field back, what does the pasuk say? Hisiga yado umatza kedei gulato. Hisiga yado means you managed to get it together. So that word means for sure, now, right? Hisiga yado means from this point into the future. So then umatza obviously means that you find it now. And it excludes selling something that you had in your rishus the whole time. But in the case of the Golus Pasuk, it says that the person went into the Ya'ar and he's cutting the eights, umatzah. I mean, the whole story is about something that was there. That was the narrative. The narrative is the guy goes into the forest, and the whole point of the forest is that the other person could also have been in the forest. So the whole thing is discussing a situation that exists, and it's giving you the story of the situation that exists. So just like the yar is something that exists now at the time that the murder occurs, so too is the matzah, referring to something that was in that yar at the time that he did the act that caused the murder. Okay? So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is completely justified for that diak contextually. The next thing that we had is that Abba Shaul was medayik at the end of the Mishnah, just like Hatavat Eitzim is a reshut, so too is the Chiyuv of Golus only in Rishut? And if, therefore, it's an Av Harodet Beno, or it's a Rav Harodet Talmido, or it's a Shliach Bezdin, that is a mitzvah, and therefore he would be Pater. I don't understand the diak. What makes you think that just because it says chatavat etzim, that chatavat etzim has to mean a rishus? Why can't it mean a chatavat etzim, which is a mitzvah? I mean, maybe the guy needs to cut down wood for schach for his sukkah. I don't know. I mean, so that would be a mitzvah. So why do you say, well, by definition, if he's cutting down wood, it could only be a something that is not a mitzvah. Mimai de mi chatavat etzim of rishus. Maybe it's talking about chatavat etzim for a sukkah. Or maybe you're cutting down wood to use on the mizbeach for the marocha. That's a big mitzvah. Or marlei, because it's never a mitzvah. If you have wood that you could simply pick up and put on your sukkah, so is it a mitzvah to cut new wood for your sukkah? Of course not. And if you have wood that was cut from before, and it's very well usable for the marocha, is mitzvah to cut wood dafka for the marocha? No, there's no such mitzvah. So you can't call that a mitzvah. It's just that you happen to need it. You can say it's a heksher mitzvah, and it can be used for a mitzvah, but it's certainly not a mitzvah to do it. So kivan she'imatzachatzu love mitzvah, the rashanami, love mitzvah. The fact that there is no other wood doesn't mean there's a specific mitzvah to cut wood. It's just that you can't make your sukkah without wood. So you need the wood. You're just giving me a mitzvah reason to need the wood. But that doesn't mean that the act of the cutting is a specific mitzvah. Now, wait a minute, says Ravina. What kind of answer is that? How about the case in the Mishnah that we said, the dafka, that we're learning out from it? What are we learning out from it? Yotza, a case where a father is hitting his son and a Rav is hitting his Talmud. I mean, why is he hitting his son? And why is he hitting his Talmud? Only because that was necessary in order to teach him. He wasn't learning and so on, right? So therefore, you're telling me that it's a mitzvah. I mean, and what if the son would have done a proper job of learning without being hit? And what if the Talmud would have been doing a proper job of learning without being hit? Is there a mitzvah to hit him? So it's exactly the same thing. You're only hitting him because of the circumstances of you need to get him to concentrate. So then that means that the hitting itself is like cutting wood for a sukkah. You need to hit him in order to have a brain that's concentrating. Same thing over there. If you already had a brain that's concentrating, you wouldn't need to hit him. So why are you telling me that that means it's not considered to be a mitzvah? The very limud in the Mishnah teaches me the opposite of what you're saying. No, says Rava, not true. Over there, even if the kid is learning properly, it's always the best thing is to beat him up. Beating up kids is the best thing you can do for them. Dechtiv yaser bincha v'yenichecha. Actually, make your kid suffer, and that way he will bring you a proper future. And in the end, it's like serving delicious food for your soul, because if you don't do that, you're going to end up with a kid that is going to just make you miserable. And therefore, it's always a good thing to beat up your kids. And as Rabbi Akiva said, to get beat up when you're a Talmud is the best thing. So now, of course, this raises all type of chinuch issues, obviously. And so the Rambam explains in the Pirshei Mishnayos that the idea over here of beating up is even if it's not for learning, but it's for tikkun amidos or for general behavior. The point is that it's always, under all circumstances, part of what will end up making that child himself. Now, what's fascinating is there's some very, very nice pieces in the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, who actually brings the modern research, pedagogical research, to show that it's terrible. If you beat your talmidim or you beat your children, then they will learn from you to beat others, and so on and so forth, all of the modern shitas. So what he basically says over there is that the fundamental mistake of these people is that they think that the important thing that you need to get the child to understand is his independence. But in reality, if you leave a child alone, what you end up with is Lord of the Flies. The child is always going to be independent. He's always going to be a murderer. He's always going to be a ganav. And he's always going to be a bully. Whatever it is that he could do, unless it's beaten out of him. And the fact is that the more that he understands that he is not meant to be an alternative sense of, what would you like for breakfast, honey? Well, we'll make you something else if you but you're instead. This is your food. You want it? Good. If not, starve. Bye. Then he gets the understanding that he is in a position of hachna'a. And it never occurs to him that if dad can hit me, I can hit dad, or if dad can hit me, I can hit others. He sees no relationship between what it is that father is doing to him and how it is that he should act to others, because it's quite clear to him that he is the mechunach in this case. And he understands that to be the relationship. The moment that you start treating the child as if he's an equal and you give him alternatives and make him feel that this is all his own approach, at that moment, you're destroying him and teaching him to be an Esav, essentially. Do what is best for you. It's all about you anyway. That is Rev Dessler's comment, a long piece about the correct approach to chinuch. However, as Rev Cook points out, that the Gemara says, Tov mardut achad belibo shel adam mimea malkiot, which means, says Rav Kook, that if you can get the person to actually respond on his own, that's worth more than beating him up 100 times. And clearly, there's many paiskim that actually bring this up, and Rav Meisha talks about it at length, and the Sri Deish goes out of his way to actually bring modern research and so on. But look, obviously it's dependent on the age of the child and so on and so forth, but that fundamentally it is a function of social norms. So in the event that you are actually hitting a child where none of his friends ever get hit, then he's simply, as far as he's concerned, he's the victim of abuse, not of chinuch. And so in that case, it's not going to be effective in any way, and he will not be yitein ma'adanim l'nafshecha. So the question of how to carefully negotiate, not giving him the feeling that the world revolves around what you want, and to constantly be giving him this modern approach. Well, honey, you have different choices of how to deal with this. What would you like to do? Which is actually leads children to hate their parents and to feel that it's all fake and a big fat lie, because they know perfectly well that their parents are feeling drop dead yellow rotten bum and they're just putting on a smile. That is not useful either. So again, the negotiations between these kind of things require a tremendous amount of das, seichel, and feedback, and are very much dependent on chanoch lenar al pi darko, and it's going to always be very dependent on the das. That's not a single das. It's a das that emerges and is constantly changing. The fact that the child yesterday was not a teenager and today suddenly in this issue is a teenager changes the equation. Of course, as the Gemara says, somebody who's makeh b'noah gadol, he's over on the fneivra latitin mikshol, and so on and so forth. These are all different halachas that need to be taken into consideration, including the Gemara that says even if you are makeh, it can only be with a shoelace, right? Arketa de Mesanya, not something that can hurt him in any way, but that it's the message that you're bringing to them. Anyway, there's tons and tons of tshuvas on this, modern tshuvas, older tshuvas, questions of what happens if a child is injured in school by a teacher that hurts him, and so on. And as I say, it's very, very much a function of what is expected in terms of social norms. So now, if you're mechanech a child in a schoolroom, you can actually be thrown into jail for hitting the child. And, you know, I mean, I could tell you when I was growing up, I mentioned this to you, it was perfectly acceptable for the Rebbe to take a ruler, put a thumbtack through the ruler, grab your hand, hold out your hand so that it's really exposed with your palm pulled, and smack the thumbtack into your hand with the part that's sticking out of the ruler. And that's what I used to get in the classroom. And I don't know, I thought that's what's done to bad boys. It seemed very normal at the time. A little mean, but what can you do? All right, so as far as the application is concerned, use your brains. Okay. So that's Rava's first response. It's always a good idea to make sure that a child knows that the world doesn't revolve around him. Hodor Amar Rava. Then Rava said, no. There's an obvious answer that I should have said. Lav milsa yidam is a ridiculous answer. I could have said a much better answer. I could have explained that the pasuk, the diak and the pasuk, is that it's got to be, it's not the difference between whether it's a mitzvah, even if you found it. That's not the point. The point is that the story is presented in the pasuk as a story. It's presented as once upon a time, there was someone who walked into a forest. Why do I say that? Because why does it say, asher yavo et re'ehu b'yar? What do you mean, asher yavo? It's haba b'imre'ehu b'yar. Asher yavo. Asher yavo is story time. So why is this about story time? Because it's meaning to tell you, the iboy ayo, v'iboy lo ayo. We're talking about a case where there was no specific need for him to actually do that that was a mitzvah. But if we're talking about the type of chopping that's a mitzvah, so then why would it have said, asher yavo? Asher yavo means that there was no absolute chiyuv to come. V'isar kadaitach mitzvah. How could he not have come? That's not asher. Misagi lo ayel. He wouldn't have had a choice. He would have had to go into that yar. So the very fact that it's a story time is a proof that we're not talking about someone who was there for a tzarech mitzvah. That's why the diak was a beautiful diak. That just like the pasuk my yar, that's what Abishol was saying. My yal is referring to a non-mitzvah chopping because it says once upon a time somebody came, and that means it wasn't a mitzvah. I'm going to vada barava l'rova. Wait a second. You're telling me that the word asher always means story time, meaning that it's an option? Somebody decided they want to come into the forest. I mean, so then what about Little Red Riding? No, sorry. So then, if that would be the case, so kol heicha dichtiv asher would always mean di'iboyhu elamiata. What are you going to do with the pasuk? Ish asher yitma v'lo yitchata, somebody who became tamei, and he did not become tohar from the paraduma. V'nichrata nefesh ayi. Mitocha kahal et migdash Hashem timei, meinida lo zorak alav. Now, wait a minute. According to you, you're saying, but that's only if it was an optional tuma, asher, right? That's what you're saying. If it says asher, it means it's a narrative about something that happened. But how about if it was an absolute chiv? A guy finds a mace on the road. That's a mace mitzvah. He's mechuyev to go ahead and bury him. And now you're telling me, oh, well, I mean, a case like that he would not be chayev, of course, for going into the Beis HaMikdash because that wasn't asher, right? That's what you're telling me? I mean, that's insane. Nobody would say that if the makor of the tumah was a mitzvah, so then there's no problem. Is that what you're going to tell me? So kol eched echliv asher, it means if you want and if you don't want. Isha asher yitma v'lo yitchata, that means only if it was an optional tuma. Yiboy metame, yiboy lo metame. But if it was a mate mitzvah, we're over there, you had no choice. He had to become tame to bury the mate mitzvah, so then he would be potter if he walks into the Beis HaMikdash. And of course he wouldn't be potter. So how can you say that asher is coming to tell me a case where there was no mitzvah? No, that's different. Because the Pasuk also says over there, Tame Yihyeh. So there it says, Kol anogea b'meit b'nefesh ha'adam v'lo yitchata et mishkan Adonai timei v'nichrata nefesh ha'yi miYisrael ki mei nida lo zarak alav Tame Yihyeh o tumato bo. So Tamei is coming to tell me, Mikol Makom. By the way, there's an amazingly beautiful diak of the Meshech Chachma about these two psukim. The first pasuk had a slight difference from the pasuk that we just brought. And is why does the first pasuk specifically refer to Et Mikdash Hashem Timei, and this pasuk refers to Et Mishkan Hashem Timei? Now, how do you explain that, O Tumatavo? He says, because this pasuk is dafka referring to the case of the Mate Mitzvah, and that only happened in the Mishkan, where we had that Mishael, and El Tzafan had to go in and be Tamei by taking out Nadav Aviv, right? So therefore, it says, even in that case, Es Mishkan Hashem Timei, O Tumatavo, if he was still Tamei, so he's going to be chayiv. Isn't that stunning? Okay. Wow. Anyway, so over there it says, Tameyiyeh mikom makom. But wait a minute. I need the words Tameyiyeh. That's coming to tell me a chiddush. Tameyiyeh means that even if the guy went to the mikveh, but there's still a level of tuma on him, meaning that he's still going to be a tul yom, and then when it says, O tumato bo, it's coming to saying, and even if he was not a tful yom, but there's still tuma on him, that's coming to be marba mechusar kippurim, which is very meduyak. And it's coming to tell me that you're chayav koris, even if you're nichnas lemishkan or lemigdash, tamei as a mechusar kippurim. So suppose you were a mitzora, or a zav, or a yoledet, or whatever or zava, those are the only cases that we have a mechusar kippurim. And if you're still a mechusar kippurim, you would be chayev, even though I've already gone to the mikveh? Yes. Even though there's already been a sunset? Yes. Because o tumatobo, you still are allowing that tumah to be there by not bringing your carbon. So that is coming to be a mechusar kippurim. So how can you use that pasuk to tell me, even if it's a mate mitzvah? Or Marley said, Rava, you're missing the point. I'm bringing my raya, not from Tumasobo, but from Od Ka'amina. I'm saying the point is that since it says still means that you're being mitzchayev because you allowed it to still be there. And if that's the case, what the heck is the difference how it got there? I don't care if it was the act was through a mate mitzvah. You could have gotten rid of it and you didn't. It's still there. So then that's your responsibility. Why is the source of the tumah going to be a difference? So o tumah tobo means under any circumstances that you allowed to still be there. Beautiful, beautiful diyukim. Anyway, this whole discussion about the question of whether we're going to be medayik in the pasuk, that it's talking about a kitzira shal, over there we're talking about whether it was a hakosh shal mitzvah or not a hakosh shal mitzvah, or whether it was talking about a cutting down the branches shal mitzvah for the sukkah of chatavat etzim. That whole discussion, interestingly, was a different version that had exactly the same discussion, but on a completely different topic, which goes like this. So some had this whole discussion of Rava, where Rava said, oh, I could have said a better answer, and he reviews the whole answer. It was referring to the wonderful diuk about what is the meaning of b'charish uv'katzir tishbot. Now that is really a weird pasuk. Sheshet yamim tavod uv'yom hashvi'i tishbot b'charish uv'katzir tishbot. I don't understand. B'charish uv'katzir? There's lamed tes melachas. So what are you telling me, b'charish uv'katzir tishbot, if we're talking about sheshes yamim tavod uv'yom hashvi'i tishbot? How could Charisha and Katsira be relevant to the Sheshes Yomim and Yom HaShvi'i? It's either a din in Malachas Shabbos, Lametes Malachas, or not. Now, this B'Charishu B'Katsir, there is a place where Charisha's Katsir is important, that's Shemitah. Yeah. So maybe it's like a switch? So yes, there's actually a Machlokas. The Tanakhama says, it says B'Charish Ubakatsir tishbot. So Rabbi Akiva says, what does it mean, b'charish ubakatsir? Obviously, it can't be telling me what you think, that the din is b'charish ubakatsir, meaning referring to Shemitah. It says that b'feresh in the pasuk, b'nogeh the dinim of Shemitah. Why do I need to say it over here? That's a pasuk that we have in Behar. So it says there, enu tzorech lomar, Chorish shel shviyas v'katzir shel shviyas, sherei kvar ne'amar sadech alot izra v'charmech alot izmor. So what is it referring to? It is referring to shviyas, but not the year of shviyas. It's telling your tremendous chiddush that even the charish of erev shviyas, so it's not the sixth year, you want to plow your land in the sixth year in order to allow things to grow better in the seventh year. It's referring to exactly that. So you cannot do a charisha for the specific benefit of growth in Shemitah. And it's referring also to the katzir. That's the katzir of Motzoi Shviyas. And it's referring to the katzir of Shviyas Shiyotze L'Motzoi Shviyas. So actually, it was royalik tzira. So as we learned in Shemitah, in Mesechah Shviyas, that means one-third of the growth. So it was already roi. It was shlish gidulai, was finished during Shemitah. And you figure, okay, but I'll leave it to grow, and then I won't be kotzer it, and I'll wait till after Shviyas, and then I'll be kotzer it, and then it won't have Kedusha Shviyas. No, it's Dafka coming to tell me the kotzer of Shviyas, that's Yotze L'Motzoi Shviyas, has all of the dinim of the Katsira of Shviyas, which means that you're not allowed to do business with it, and it's going to be Chayav in Biur, and so on and so forth. All of the dinim of Shviyas are going to apply to it. That's what it's coming to tell me. So, Kotzer Shviyas, Shiyotze L'Motzoi Shviyas. This is Rabbi Akiva's approach. Rabbi Yishmael says, no, what do you mean? It's not referring to Shemitah at all. It says Sheshes Yomim. Sheshes Yomim and Yom HaShviyah is a reference to Shabbos. And now you're telling me at the end of the pasuk, all of a sudden we're switching to Shviyas. This makes sense. No. I'll tell you what it's talking about. It's all about Shabbos. And it's trying to tell me, why do I take Chorish and Katzir instead of talking about all of the Lametes Melachas? Because I'm coming to tell you, big Chiddush, that only Melachas that would be similar to Charisha. So just like Charisha, is always a rishus. There's no mitzvah to do charisha, ever. Therefore, even the ketzira is talking about only a ketzira which itself is similar to charisha, and it's a rishus. But suppose you have a ketzira that is a mitzvah, what would that be? Ah, just in time for this day of Yom Shlishi LaOmer, that would be the ketzira of the Omer. Because the Ketzira of the Omer is a mitzvah. And therefore, the Pasuk is coming to tell me, if it's Shabbos and you need to cut for the Omer, you're Mechal on Shabbos to cut for the Omer. As we know, the Mishnah, Shabbos Hayom, Shabbos Hayom, Shabbos Hayom, Magalzeh, so on and so forth. That's a mitzvah. Here's where we learn it from. Just like Chorosh is Rishus, Av Katsira Zushus, Yotza Katsira Eimer, which is a mitzvah, and the Torah is Dafka coming to be Mater Katsira Sa'eimer. Now, on this, we have the same question that was asked to Rava, as the version that we have was asked to Rava, how do you know it's referring to cutting down a tree, which is Rishus? Maybe it's cutting down a tree, which is a mitzvah for your sukkah. Here somebody asked Rava the same question on this sugya. What makes you think that we're talking about a harisha, which is a rishus? Maybe it's the harisha to be able to have the omer grow in time, and then it would be harisha of a mitzvah. So it's the same mitzvah, and the Torah is saying, tishbot, you should not do a harisha shal mitzvah. So I don't understand. Why do you say there's never a harisha of mitzvah? Answered Rava the same answer that in our sugya was the answer he gave here. Look, if you would have had ground that was already harush, you wouldn't have to plow a new field dafka for the omer. There's no din of lishma for the harish of the omer. So if there had been a field that was harush, you wouldn't have had to. Okay, you couldn't find a field that was harush. Fine, so it's a heksha mitzvah, but it's not a mitzvah. Therefore, Kivan de imat zacharush eno choresh. It's not called a mitzvah, even in this case. And again, just like over here, Ravina asked Rava from our Mishnah, just like we had in the way that we just read it. It says in the Mishnah, Yotza Ava Maked Beno, Varav Arodeh Tamido, Vishliach Bezdin. If you're right, why is that a mitzvah? Lema kivan de ilo gomer lav mitzvah. Since if this kid was learning properly, it would not be part of your mitzvah of chinuch to beat him up to learn, because he's already learning. So lema kivan de ilo gomer lav mitzvah, hashtanami lav mitzvah. So it's only like a extra mitzvah. If he would be learning properly without beating him up, you wouldn't have to beat him up. Same thing over here. If you found already charush, it wouldn't be considered a mitzvah. But you see that your svar is not true. And just like Ravet said here, he says in this version, even if the kid is learning, it's always good to beat up your kid and to beat up your Talmud for, again, it depends what, maybe he can learn better. Some learn, that's what it's talking about. He's able to learn better, but not doing his best. Others learn. Exactly. And the other approach is if he had anything that needed correcting in terms of his mitzvahs, and some of the mafarshim say, everybody's got something to need correcting, find out what it is and beat him. So there's always a point of being miyasrim. Tichtiv yaser bincha v'yenichecha. You'll end up having hana from him, which you will not have, as we know, is very much the modern situation. Nobody has enough from children anymore because they've been brought up to be Esavs and animals and thinking that everything revolves around them. So therefore, it would be a mitzvah anyway. Then, just like as in this sugya, Rava comes up with his statement, wait a minute, there's a much better answer than what I gave about since it could have been. The point is, lav milsehi da amre, because the whole point was that the Torah is comparing the Ketzira to the Harish, right? Which means that in the same way, from the Pasuk itself, in the same way that we're talking about the type of Harisha, which if you did find Harush, you wouldn't need to redo, we're talking about that type of Ketzira. If you found it Katsur, we wouldn't need to do it. But if you're going to tell me that it's talking to the Omer, that's not true, because even if you find katsur, but it wasn't katsur letzerech the eimer, you have a mitzvah to be katsur lishma, and therefore yotze ketziras ha'eimer, where matzah katsur would be katsur, there you'd have to be mitzvah liktzer v'lavi, in which case it makes sense, even according to the way that we just learned it. Ha'av goleh al yedei ha'ben, v'ha'ben goleh al yedei ha'av. So a father would go into galut if he accidentally kills his son, and his son would go into galut if he accidentally kills his father. This is a little bit strange, because the only point in mentioning this, as Tosis points out, is if it's referring to those specific issues where there's a difference between father and son, and that seems to be a contradiction to what we learned before, that a father actually is not chayev for causing a death of a child in the context of father-child relationships for chinuch and so on. So Gemara is going to discuss that. Hakol golin al yedei Yisrael V'Yisrael Golin Al Yedehen. Furthermore, anyone at all, and we'll see what that includes, what does it mean to include anyone at all, is going to go into Galut if he kills B'Shogeg Ben Yisrael, and Yisrael would be Gola by killing them, except for a Ger Toshav. Now remember, a Ger Toshav is somebody who is mekabel on himself to be Shemer the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Nayach, but he does not become a Ben Yisrael. He's not Mekayim or Mekabel on himself to Tayag Mitzvahs. He has a right to live in Eretz Israel, and he is not, however, the same as a Yisrael, in which case it would appear that Chutz B'Ger Toshav means that there would be no din of Galut at all on a Ger Toshav. And in a moment, the Mishnah is going to make it clear that that isn't true, because it goes on to say, Ger Toshav ino gole, that there is a din of a Ger Toshav, except that it only applies in the event that he killed another Ger Toshav. So it doesn't mean, Chutz Miger Toshav, that there's no din of an Ir Miklat. So we'll have to define what exactly the circumstances are, whether there is a din of Galut or whether there is not. Now let's start at the beginning of the Mishnah. Ha'av Gole Al Yedei HaBein. Now didn't you just say yesterday that Yatsa Ha'av Amake Et Beno? Now, obviously, I mean, you could say it's not talking about that case. You could say it's talking about a case where a father was walking through a yard, had no idea that his son was there, threw a stone and so on. But then what would be the point of mentioning it? Obviously, there's no difference between a father, son, or anybody else. If you're mentioning it, this is how Tosfos explains the Gemara's question. If you're mentioning it, then quite clearly you're talking about even in those circumstances where the specific relationship of the av to the bein is going to be meaningful. And that's in the context, l'chora, of exactly what the Mishnah said. There is no galut. Well, we're talking about a case where the son was learning perfectly well without needing to be beaten. And therefore, if the father hits him and he ends up killing him, then he had no mitzvah in doing so. What? Didn't you say yesterday, Ahamet Afagav the Gomer mitzvah kovid? You said that there's always some good reason to beat a kid. Now, actually, what we're talking about over here is Beshulya Denagri. We're not talking about where he was teaching him Torah. We're talking about a case where he was teaching his child to be a carpenter. And therefore, we don't even have to say that it's talking about a case of hitting, by the way, which is the way that many understand the Rambam. We're just talking about a case. He was teaching him carpentry. They were sawing a piece of wood. And the father is trying to show him how to saw properly, and a piece of the wood goes and it hits him right in the eye and destroys his brain and kills the kid. And it's not talking about necessarily that he killed him. So that's what that he hit him in terms of teaching him, but I meant hit him, not killed him. Says the Gemara, but what's the difference? Teaching a child carpentry is ipso facto a mitzvah. Although today people seem to have forgotten this mitzvah, the Gemara says that a father is mechuyev to teach a trade to his son. So then that would mean that he's being oisek the mitzvah. So why wouldn't he be poter in exactly the same way that he's poter if he was attempting to teach him Torah and was beat him because he wasn't learning properly? No, here it's talking about his son already has a different trade. So let's say the son is already a doctor, but the father wants his son to actually make money in Israel. Can't make money as a doctor. So he figures, okay, we'll teach him to be a carpenter. That way he can make money on the side and still have fun being a doctor. So the gomer umnata achritas, in that, giving him that extra trade, that is not a mitzvah. Aben golal yedea avim. What about the other piece of the Mishnah? That a son is going to go into Golos if he accidentally kills his father, but a Braita says that when it says Make Nefesh, it says Gonus Shama Ko Make Nefesh Bishkaga. And Make Nefesh means not including someone who kills his father. Why not including someone who kills his father? Because a child is going to be Chayev Misa even if he wouldn't have killed his father, even if he just wounds his father, even if he bruises his father, he's going to be chayev, right? So then because of that, as a mark in the event that he was marking nefesh to aviv. This is what the Gemara thinks. Now, obviously, the simple meaning of this, and in the end, that's what we're going to come back to, is that prat, what we mean over here, prat lamakei aviv, is where he didn't kill his father. And you would have thought that since, in terms of the chiyuv misa, if he kills, if he hits his father, and he doesn't cause him any serious wounds, but he gave him a bruise. But the din over there is that he's chayuv misa for hitting a father. So you might have thought that if he did precisely that, but he did it b'shogeg, he threw a ball and it hit his father and it caused the bruise. Comes along the pasuk to say, no, that's not called makei nefesh. That's the simple meaning that we end up saying is what it actually does mean. But at this point, we think that it means something more than that. We think that it means that in the event that a person who would be chayev, even for causing a wound, he would be chayev misa, does not go into golus in the event that he is chayev misa for actually killing, if it was done b'shogeg. That's what we thought it meant, which would mean that the Braita is going against the Mishnah, because it says that the ben is actually gola al yedei aviv, through killing his father. Omer of Kahana, well, what we could say is that the Braita is going like Rabbi Shimon, and the Mishnah is going like the Rabbanan. Now, one misreading leads to a lot of complications. So remember that we had back in Sanhedrin, the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan, about what the correct order is of the Arba Misais that were in Imsur Lebesdin, right? Now, according to Rabbi Shimon, we had an opposite reading in the Mishnah, because according to Rabbi Shimon, Chenek is more chomer than Saif, and okay, also said Sreif is more chayv than Tzkila. That's not Nogea here. What's Nogea here is that, fascinatingly, the din of, according to Rabbi Shimon, would mean that if a person who made a wound in his father, by making that wound, he would be chayev misa. And the misa that he would be chayev would be actually chenek, as we learned before. So if he kills the parent, in this we're saying av, but obviously it's av or aim, if he kills, so then, according to Rabbi Shimon, the more chomer, normally for killing your chayev only, according to Rabbi Shimon, only your chayev actually saif. But since, according to Rabbi Shimon, chenek is more chomer than saif, so we're going to give him the misa that is more chomer. And that is, he's going to be chayev chenek. According to the Rabbanan, he's going to also get the chayev misa that's more chomer. But according to the Rabbanan, that more chomer misa is saif. So that means that what? According to Rabbi Shimon, since in this case it's a more chomer chayev, only shigigat saif nitna lekapara. Where did the Torah say that you can go into golus and you can get a kapora through being an ir miklad? That's only where the chiyav was a chiyav misa of saif. But a chiyav misa, which includes a greater punishment of chenek, according to Rabbi Shimon, which is greater, the Torah never said that there's a din of golus for such a chomor crime. That's mechayav chenek. Therefore, it says over here that there's no way for him to be mitzchaper by going into golus. Bashenken, according to Rabbanan, since the saif is more chomer than the chenek, and the horeg aviv, therefore, would be a standard shogeg shigigat saifu, and shigigat saif is precisely the case that the Torah says you do go into golus for. So that would be the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that the ben is gaila ayidei av, and everything would work out perfectly. Rava says, whoa, that's awfully complicated. The point is that the Braisa bringing that pasuk was only trying to say something very simple. If somebody causes a bruise on a father, he didn't kill him, you might think that maybe he goes into golus, because in terms of a parent-child relationship, it's the equivalent of a chiyav misa of killing him. Comes along the pasuk to say, kol horeg nefesh b'shkaga. And this is not called a horeg nefesh. Shoprat lo secha buraba aviv b'shogeg. And why do I think that not killing would be Golis and Ari Mikwak? Yes, because Salka Daita Chanina, since the Torah makes a child who attacks a father purposefully bemazed, being Chayev Misa, so he would be Bar Katalohu, so then that would mean that he's the equivalent of murdering, and therefore Beshogeg, he should go into Golis. Kamash Malan, then no, it's only a Chiev of Golis for Make Nefesh, not a Chiev for Hakah She'ein Bo Yitziat HaNefesh. Then we continue to say in the Mishnah, everyone goes into Golos al Yedei Yisrael, which means through killing accidentally a Ben Yisrael. You go into Golos. What does everybody mean? Who is everybody? I mean, is there something I'm missing over here? Says Gemara, yes, of course there is. What would be the din of an Evet? Or what would be the din of a Kuti? So the Mishnah is coming to say that even an Evet Kenani, remember an Evet Kenani has mitzvahs like Neshei Yisroel. And a Kuti, now we're talking about over here a Kuti before the Gezerah that made Kutim Ke'akum L'chol Dover, which took place later than the Mishnah was written. That was a story where they found that the Musyona, that they found that they were worshipping and Hagrizim, and that mysterious Gemara Chulin, Les kan shemre mitzvah. So anyway, the kutim now would be the same as a goy. But here it's talking about, according to the Mandi Yomar, and remember the machlokas, are kutim geri emet, or are kutim geri arayot, arayot with an olive, meaning lions, not lions, akiva, lions. And in that event, they would be, of course, they would have dinim of... Sorry, I can't resist. They would have had a din of vacuum, but this Mishnah is going according to the Mandi Yomar that they are Gerei Emet. So it's coming to tell me exactly that. Tanina Laha de Tanur Rabbanan. And that would mean that the Mishnah is coming to teach me the following Braita. Eved Vekuti, Gole, Veloke, Al Yedei Yisrael. They would go into Golos, and they would be Chayim Malkas for what it is that they do to a Ben Yisrael. And a Yisrael also is Gola Veloka Ayadei Kuti Ve'eved. It's possible for Yisrael to be given Malkas for the way that he treats something that he did to a Kuti or to an Eved. We're going to talk about what that is in a moment. And he would also go into Galut. Okay, I don't quite understand. I understand the first part. Eved Ve'kuti Gola Ayadei Yisrael Veloke. What would the two cases be? Well, he would be Gola if he kills him, B'shogeg. And he would be loke, let's say he cursed a Jew. So if he curses a Jew, so then he would be chayav malchus for the nasiba amcha and the lotikal el cheresh, which we made the hekesh, the comparison in Sanhedrin about the dinner. But how would a Yisrael be gole veloke? Gole, I understand. Ayede kuti. Because if he accidentally kills a kuti, I understand why he's Chayim Malkus. But if he cursed a kuti, by definition, if the person is part of the kutim, that means that he does not accept Torah Shebal Peh, and he's not shomer all of the mitzvahs. It's only those mitzvahs that the kutim are makban on, but he's not generally osa maisa amcha, by virtue of the very fact that he's identifying with the kutim. And we learn out from the word vinasi be'amecha. Be'amecha means that he is be'ose ma'ase amecha. And we learn out from there to all kolala that in the event that you curse someone who does not act according to the way that Yisrael acts, then the Torah doesn't aser the kolala. And in that case, how would there be a case where you would get malchus for cursing a kuti? Elam Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, it could be very simply. Kagon Sheheid Bo V'Huzam. Maybe a Yisrael was a witness against a kuti, that he did something that he would have gotten malchus for, and he turns out to be an Eid Zonim. So the Kiddush is that, so what? Even though he's a kuti, the din is that he has a din of a Yisrael, and therefore we would be Mekayim, Kasher Zomam. Okay, fine. I understand. That works for the Kuti. How is that going to work for the Eved? You can't apply that case to an Eved, because remember, the two cases are Kuti ve'Eved Kenani Ayyadei Yisrael, and Yisrael Ayyadei Dekuti Vevet Knani. Now, if the case that we're referring to in this direction is that the Yisroel was made against the Kuti or the Eved, then the equivalent case would have had to be that the Kuti or the Eved were made connected to Yisroel. But an Eved can't be made, so that doesn't make sense. So what are you telling me? Tikavasi gabe Eved, so the equivalent, we're juxtaposing the two cases, the Yisroel ayde Eved v'Kuti, the Kuti Ve'evet Ayde Yisrael. The juxtaposition doesn't work, because then the juxtaposed case, the Kavate, which would be the juxtaposed case in terms of the Eved, would have to be that the Eved had given testimony against the Yisrael, and then he was found to be an Eid Somein. Eved Bare Dutu, how in the world can an Eved give testimony if that's one of the halachas that we say that he's Bishum Ponim, he's not acceptable as an aide in court? So how all of a sudden could we ever have the juxtaposed case? It wouldn't exist. Hello, okay, I give up. You're right. There's another meaning where we talked about a Ben Yisroel could get Malkus, and it's talking about that he hit him. Hello, Mirvach, Breda Ravika, Bumaya Skinan, Kikon, Shehiko, Haka'a, She'en Boshova Pruta. Normally, remember, someone who hits a person would be chayev makos. For what is her? Pen Yosef lakoto makaraba. That's lotosif lakoto ben Yosef. That includes even the shvi'ar bezden, koshken, other people who just punch a guy in the nose. So someone like that would be chayev malchus for a lav. The thing is that since there's also a chiv of tashlumin of chamisha dvarim, so because of that, he's not going to be able to be given malchus because kol hamishalim in a loka, the Gemara learns that. So if he's going to be paying nezek, tsar, sheves, ripui, and boshet, he's not going to be chayev. But suppose there's no monetary payment that is possible because all he did was smack him across the face. So he didn't cause any damage at all. And since it was a kuti or kdani, it wasn't considered to be a real embarrassment. It's on its own. You can't pay for it. In the event that you can't pay for it, then you're in trouble because then you do get malchus. Because the Omer Rabbami, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, in the event that someone is makeh haka'asha in bashava pruta, you would get malchus. And now you'll say, but wait a minute. There's a Mandi Omer who says that the Torah compares haka'a leklala. And if in klala you're potter, if the person is not osa maisa amcha because of nasi ba'amcha, so then if you hit, you would also be potter. Yes, but this braita here was not talking about according to that Mandi Omer. It's going according to the Mandi Omer that there is no hekesh between haka'a veklala, and therefore there's never any kind of letting a guy go because, well, I only smacked a bum in the face anyway. It doesn't matter who you smack in the face, you would still be chayev.